Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Kai-Fu Lee has spent nearly 40 years at the forefront of artificial intelligence. He's the chairman, CEO, and co-founder of Sinovation Ventures. It's a venture capital firm with about $2.5 billion in assets. It focuses on AI, healthcare, and other high tech, and has made more than 300 investments. It's one of the first Chinese VC firms to have a presence in the U.S., and he's also the co-chair of the Artificial Intelligence Council at the World Economic Forum. He's the former president of Google China, and before that was an executive at Microsoft and at Apple. His newest book is AI 2041, 10 Visions for Our Future. And unlike his last book, AI 2041, it's a work of fiction. He and his co-author, the sci-fi novelist Chen Chou-Fen, write 10 stories. They're all set 20 years from now. In 1041. Now, these stories illustrate a world that's layered with artificial intelligence. They cover themes like AI displacing workers, deepfakes, and how AI will reimagine education. Of course, also imagines what could go wrong. Kai-Fu Lee joins us now from Beijing. Kai-Fu, great to chat with you. Thanks so much for taking the time. Why are these stories? Why is sci-fi? Why is it the best way to communicate what you envision AI doing to society in 20 years?
Hi, great to be here. AI is such an important technology, perhaps the most important in the history of mankind. And yet it's sometimes viewed as rocket science, very hard to understand. So I wanted to see if there's a way to make it accessible to people and that it's actually not only understandable, but also fun to read. That's why I found a science fiction writer to work with me. He writes the stories, I write the analysis. And then we make sure that the stories are realistic within a 20-year time frame so that the stories you read will be roughly what life will be like 20 years from now.
Each story has an introduction. It also has an analysis after the fact. What were you trying to do here?
I wanted to explain how the technology works and what it's good for, why it's good at what it's good at, and also why it is almost always a double-edged sword. What makes it incredibly powerful also creates some downside. For example, AI is great to help Facebook and Amazon make a lot of money by showing us things that we will watch and buy. But then are those things good for us? Because that's not being considered in the AI run by Facebook and Amazon. So there is a flip side to this. And the stories really not just tell the technologies, but also bring up issues that the technology causes and also suggest possible solutions.
Do you think the companies that deploy AI today that are working on solving these issues, do you think they're taking into account the pitfalls, the perils that you associate with AI?
I think they are trying, but because it's a new technology, so the tools to combat the problems aren't there yet, and the engineers building the products weren't aware of the problems. None of the problems were intentionally created, you know, issues with respect to personal data and explainability and what happens when AI makes a mistake and accountability. And also bias. So these were not intentional by the companies or the engineers who built it. But now that we know these are real problems, we need to put the training, the regulations, and investigating new technologies to combat technology problems.
Do you think the incentives, though, are aligned for companies that do work on this type of technology to create solutions, or are they mainly concerned with us getting to buy more, to engage more, to read more, to spend more time on the platform without being concerned about the consequences?
Oh, well, you really hit the problem on the head, that it is exactly because the incentives are not aligned. So I think the only way to fix it is to realign the incentives. And in the short term, the internet companies could have an incentive realignment if there were either regulations or third parties that may do an AI audit, or maybe there would be watchdog functions that are estimating percentage of fake news and things like that, that forces them before their brand and reputation to consider that. Because if they lose their brand and have a some kind of a media disaster, they will lose customers. So that would is one way to externally force an approximation to an alignment. But there are also other ways. Why can we not encourage building of applications and products that help us in the long term? So if there were a product that could make me more intelligent, more knowledgeable, more wealthy, more happier, then that would be a product I would want to buy more than I would want the Facebook newsfeed or YouTube. So I think there are ways to align user interests. I think people just, the companies just felt like they got such a good AI tool, it can make money directly, so use it for that singular purpose. And forget really that companies should be focused on user needs first, and users want more than just watching some videos and reading some blogs. There are long-term goals that we have, and when we have such a powerful AI tool that can optimize our long-term goals, it would be such a unfortunate event if nobody tried to build something that's for our long-term interests.
So let's stick with Facebook, because it's one of the companies that you mentioned. So who should regulate Facebook? Should it be the U.S. government, or should there be some sort of international body that takes these difficult questions into account to come up with some regulatory framework? After all, for all intents and purposes, Facebook is a global company.
Right, right. I'm not an expert in regulation, and I think regulation, in my opinion, is just usually the last resort, because especially given the tools that the U.S. has generally used, such as breaking a company up, that's just too brittle. So I think there needs to be ways to push the company into an alignment with the goals that we, the users, have. And I mentioned a few of them. You know, when I worked for Google, there were third parties that measured the relevance quality of Google search engine, and Google paid a lot of attention to that. So if there could be similar third-party watchdog measures of level of fake news, number of deep fakes, and how much spam, and then it's measured externally, that would put a pressure on the engineering team to figure out at least to spend part of their time to make the content higher quality instead of just getting us to click more and more.
So Kai-Fu, let's take a step back and just think about how we interact with AI in 2021. Just take us through, because I think that there are a lot of people who don't necessarily think about it each and every day, that we are interacting with this technology, we are experiencing this technology. So what does it look like for in our daily lives globally in 2021?
Sure, I'll give a couple of examples. So one example is that AI's language capabilities to converse with us will grow significantly, in many cases indistinguishable from human-human communication. And that means AI will become a companion, and that companion can learn our interests and try to help us improve ourselves. That would be an educational companion, or to figure out how we might be healthier. That might be more of a doctor or psychiatrist companion, or it could just be a friend, a pal for a young kid. And they can take shapes in both in the phone and the computer, of course, but also VR and AR will be really realistic by then, that if we put on something like glasses, we will see figures and avatars superimposed on the glasses. And then they're it's as though they were in the actual environment. So it would be really virtual reality that's indistinguishable from the real reality. in transportation, autonomous vehicles should just about work by then, get all the kinks worked out. Of course, throughout the way, we will see incrementally robo-buses and shuttles and trucks and so on. But truly, the steering wheel-free car that we can either share, ride, or buy will be just about 15 to 20 years from now. That will dramatically change our habits because we will have something like 10 hours a week freed up that when we're in the car, we can educate, entertain, communicate, no longer have to drive or look at the road. Also, cars can be on demand, available, and they will be smart. They will talk to each other. They will avoid accidents. They will miss each other by 1 centimeter in a very calculated way. They will drive more safely, probably eventually reducing fatalities by 90%. So it'll be more efficient, lower cost, save us time, more comfortable, and also safer. And finally, in healthcare, AI will be able to, with a very high likelihood, predict the next pandemic. Because it could be watching a lot of data all over the world. And AI will be used to, alongside with scientists, invent new drugs. And that the cost of new drugs probably could be as little as 10% of new drug inventions today. And what that means is today's pharmaceuticals can only go after blockbuster drugs for common diseases. But in the future, when the cost is slashed because AI is proposing treatments that are highly accurate, working with scientists, reducing the cost by 90%, that means rare diseases for which it's not economical for pharmaceuticals to go after will become possible. And also AI will be keeping us healthy by taking all of our MRI and gene sequencing and blood to regularly monitor our health and give us hints on how to be healthier and live longer, and both of which will happen in 20 years.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
You paint a picture that I think is really optimistic when it comes to this type of technology, but I'm wondering what your biggest fears are regarding AI.
Yeah, AI, like any technology, is neutral, and it's good or bad because of the people who program it have good or bad intentions. And the examples I gave earlier are all constructive, but there are definitely cases where AI can do terrible things. AI can be used by companies to change the way we think. We already saw that, to influence the way we think, and that's extremely dangerous. AI can be used in the most disastrous situation is autonomous weapons. Imagine a $1,000 drone combined with recognition of individuals with a bullet connected to it, and that becomes an assassination tool. And if deployed in the tens of thousands, it becomes a tool for genocide. So that essentially makes terrorist groups that have a few million dollars, they can almost do what countries do to create havoc and damage without risking any terrorist lives. So that's something that's, I think, extremely dangerous. And also, unlike nuclear weapons, which offers a unique property that is mutually destructive, so people don't launch it for fear of retaliation. But autonomous weapons are not totally destructive and not easily detectable, so that's another serious problem. And lastly, we already saw deepfakes, but that's really just the beginning. AI will be able to fake many things. It will be able to make videos that look real when it's all fabricated. It will be able to talk like someone. Courtroom evidence may be at a point where people can't tell if it's fake or real anymore, not to mention rumors on the and false rumors on the internet, and also AI will be able to fake emotion. So, you know, the scenario we saw in the movie Her, you know, while AI doesn't have any feelings, it can fake feelings to a point that could be used to do bad things as well. So I think the dangerous cases are just as significant. But my optimism is based on the fact that all technologies that have been incredibly powerful, you know, electricity, automobile, internet, PC, they have caused problems from time to time, but ultimately they end up doing a lot more good than evil, because hopefully we are learning from experience and have some wisdom to self-manage so that we figure out ways to counter the bad guys and encourage the good guys.
Well, how do we do that?
It ends up being more constructive.
Because I can't help but think that those...
How do we counter...
Yeah, because I can't help but think that those problems are of a different magnitude than problems created by other types of modernization. It really makes me think of the sci-fi series Black Mirror and the way that that show really lays out so many of the dystopian futures that you could think about when it comes to this type of technology. How do we prevent that type of future from overtaking us?
Yeah, I'm a fan of Black Mirror. It's partly inspired the book. And I think in the Black Mirror, though, it usually technology is used in the wrong way by some bad person, and then it leads to usually a disastrous ending. In my book, I try to create scenarios where many of the bad endings were saved by the good guys, and that might be saved with some clever technology that combats the bad technology, or with some smart tool that prevents the bad technology from propagating, or maybe there's some new regulations like the AI audit. So what I wanted to propose in the book is that, yes, AI, and like any other great technology, will create a lot of problems, but many of the problems can be greatly reduced if we let technologists work on solutions that address the problems created by technologies themselves.
Got to ask about your interpretation of what's been happening in China and your interpretation specifically of President Xi's crackdown on technology. I'm wondering how you interpret Beijing's measures against Didi Chuxing or Jack Ma, for example.
Oh, these are not really technology firms per se. I mean, we invest in technology, invest in robots and AI and healthcare and, you know, new cures and new drugs. Those are actually heavily encouraged. What those companies, Didi and Alibaba and Tencent and others, are really, I think the issue is that they have a lot of power and a lot of data, and that gives them even more power, and that power needed to be checked. So not at all, you know, consistent with what U.S. and EU are doing to rein in Google, Facebook, and Amazon.
Given what's happened in China over the last year when it comes to reining in these tech firms, has it changed the way that you're thinking about investing in Chinese companies? Does it make you think differently about how to deploy your money?
Well, actually, we've always been investors in deep tech. So now it's just a better time than ever to keep doing what we have been doing. Deep tech hasn't been as favored. They haven't seen as much growth 5 or 10 years ago compared to the internet giants. But I think going forward, deep tech is going to generate the best returns, probably globally, but certainly in China.
You told Bloomberg a few years ago, back in 2018, that 95% of your money was invested in Chinese companies. Is that still consistent, roughly?
Yes, still the case, even more given COVID.
How so? What do you mean?
Well, we're unable to travel, so we can't really see a lot of companies outside China.
And you think you need to see companies in order to know whether or not to invest in them?
That would help to build trust, to see the people, to understand them. So I think generally the answer is yes. We have made one investment in a French company without ever seeing them, but that's certainly the exception, not the rule.
So that brings me to our next question, is how you think the pandemic will affect China, the tech industry, and China's place in the world?
The pandemic has really in China pushed further the adoption of automation and robotics. Initially, it may have been for reducing social contact by having robots in factories and restaurants and even homes. I get my takeout delivered by a robot nowadays. So I think the robotic revolution is probably the big step forward that will be helpful to push China's technologies ahead. On the flip side, the other big thing that's happened globally is the work from home. And that has really streamlined work for a lot of companies and also enabled the use of AI and cloud technologies. And that's one where I think U.S. has really done by far the best job, partly because China, U.S. has always had stronger enterprise technologies, but also partly because Americans were working from home longer than the Chinese. So I think each country has got some benefit out of COVID, even though it's a terrible disaster for the whole world.
Kai-Fu, things have changed just quite a bit since you picked your computer science as your college major years ago. It was, of course, before you went to get your PhD from Carnegie Mellon. So if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your 18-year-old self? What advice would you give to college students today?
I would say back then, following your heart, do what you really love to do is the same advice I give to myself back then and also to a young person today, perhaps even more important today because a young person is not just competing with other young people, but also AI is taking away routine jobs. So it pushes us to do things that AI cannot do, whether it's creativity or compassion, and it forces us to be the best we can be, and the best we can be is doing things that we're good at and the things we love.
Kai-Fu Lee, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us in Bloomberg Business Week. Really appreciate it.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.